Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears off and running with you on this Thursday, June the 3rd, 2021, 6:03:21, 12 minutes past the hour here on WWGH Radio. And it is a very unseasonably cool day here in central Ohio. The rain continues. I do not have to water my tomato plants right now. My new venture into gardening this year, as I have planted two different types of tomato plants, have not had to water them the last few days with all the rain we've had. But it looks like tomorrow maybe the rain will finally depart the area and the temperatures will go up a little bit. And we also had quite a bit of fog out there this morning. So drive safe with your headlights on and your windshield wipers on as you're out and about in the community this morning. Also want to remind everybody, tomorrow is National Donut Day, and as we've told you, we're going to be doing something fun here tomorrow in the studio from 8:15 in the morning until 1 in the afternoon. We are going to have three different types of donuts. Now, it's a minimum of three right now. It could be more by tomorrow, but they will be from establishments in Marion, and there's even some donuts being brought in from Columbus, Ohio, Buckeye Donut, a very famous donut company in Columbus. Somebody's going down at 5:30 a.m. tomorrow to pick up some donuts for us to have at 8 a.m. And we will have at least three judges in the studio tomorrow with coffee and donuts. And you won't want to miss these judges. These are our celebrity judges tomorrow. And during each hour, they will try the donuts from a singular place. And then at the end of the 3 hours, after they have tried the three donuts, they will rate the donuts on a scale of 1 to 10, and we will take the combined score of all three judges, and the donut with the most points will be number one donut, and so on and so forth, second and third. That's how it will all go tomorrow, so don't miss that tomorrow morning. And some special guests tomorrow morning along the way as well via the telephone and other sources. But this morning we have a guest on this program who we have not had on in a while, although he is on this station every week. You hear him every Wednesday from 12:15 until 1 p.m. with Glenn Coble on A Progressive Life. He is an author, political historian, professor, Dr. Ronald Fineman. Dr. Fineman, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you today?
It's rainy. So, you know, we're not quite where we want to be for the beginning of June with, 17 days till summer, but we'll get there.
It was 80 degrees here in South Florida.
It's nice down there, but, you know, did people ever stop going out and about in Florida during the pandemic? There haven't been stringent laws down there.
I think it depends on who it is. I've been careful where I have been, and of course I've been vaccinated. But, you know, there's everywhere you go, there are people who just refuse to follow science. What can I say?
Well, you know, here's what I want to talk about when it comes to this. I want to touch on the pandemic, because last night we had our Vax-a-Million again here in Ohio. And the numbers that I have been shown are that since Vax-a-Million, we've been in it 2 weeks now, and it was announced a little more than 2 weeks ago, not a whole lot of lead time, but as the numbers show, it looks like vaccinations have only went from 38% in Ohio to just over 40%. So $2 million gone, the hope of $5 million, and we've only moved 2%. We're still not anywhere near 50%. Would you call that a failure as a program or a success?
I would say, being political, in the middle, I'd say it's a success, but not a total success. It's still good if more people are getting it, getting the vaccination, and of course, awarding scholarships to students is certainly good, and a lottery exists in most states, so I would call it in the middle. I would not a success, but I wouldn't call it a failure. How's that for being in the middle?
Well, it's interesting because the governor has sort of wrapped himself in that. And when you speak about politics, I think that's one of the things that made people very uneasy with this, was that when I get the email, which I usually get it just minutes after the winners are drawn on Wednesday night, Governor DeWine always has a statement in there. And this is a man who is going to be up for re-election next year. This is a man whose legislature here in Ohio has pretty much turned on him, Republican legislature. This is a man who probably will face a challenge in the Republican primary from a gentleman, Jim Renacci, who has President Trump's campaign manager, Brad Parscale, advising him. You know, was it more about getting the vaccinations done, or was it more about trying to resurrect yourself with a not-so-great approval rating in your own party?
I don't know. I'm not a big fan of Ohio politics right now with Josh Mandel, burning in some paper or whatever it was about the vaccination. I think that's crazy. I would just say that I think Mike DeWine is one of the few Republican governors who has shown guts, courage, and independence from Donald Trump, along with the governor of Maryland, the governor of Massachusetts, and the governor of Vermont, and I think he should be saluted for that. But is it totally a success? No, but I still think any increase in the number of vaccinations is a good thing.
Well, when it comes to Ohio politics, a lot of people are mentioning Josh Mandel for burning the mask, but yesterday our elected Attorney General, Dave Yost, is on social media burning his mask.
I think it's irresponsible, that's all I can say. But look, the same thing is happening here in Florida with our governor, who is the mini-Trump, is this what he is, Ron DeSantis. And I've noticed he and now the governor of Texas are copying something Trump did that I've never seen anybody else do who is an executive. That is, they sign a piece of legislation, and then they turn it around and show it to everybody as if it's show and tell, like an elementary school. It's the most ridiculous thing. Joe Biden signs things, he does not show it to everybody. It's such infantile behavior, but they're copying him because they think that's the way they're going to be going to higher office.
Well, but, you know, here in Ohio, which always was considered a swing state, we voted for Barack Obama twice. We voted for George W. Bush twice. We voted for Bill Clinton twice. But the first time we voted for somebody who did not get in office in a very long time was President Trump last time.
That's true. Ohio is a swing state, and it usually is a state that at least a Republican has to win in order to become president. Every Republican president, except Gerald Ford, who was not elected originally, has won Ohio until, you know, so that is true. But swing states are changing. Missouri used to be a swing state that was usually going to go with the winner, and lately they have not. So it's, things are changing. Politics is changing dramatically.
Yeah, but do you think that's about Republican Democrat, or is that about Donald Trump?
I think a lot of it is Donald Trump, but now we hear his blog has been shut down after 29 days for lack of traffic. And I do think that the American people broadly are starting to turn against him, and the Republican Party is committing suicide if they continue to follow him. That's the way I get that feeling it's going to happen. But, you know, we'll have to see. The 2022 midterms will tell us a lot.
If you're the Republican Party, though, and you look at your history, recent history, you have a two-term president in George W. Bush who you don't even invite to your conventions because he left office with such a low approval rating. You have John McCain, who was beaten very badly by Barack Obama. You have Mitt Romney, who got a few more states than John McCain, but did not do very well. And then here comes Donald Trump, and he wins, and he draws big crowds in certain states, and he puts Ohio back in the Republican column, and he puts Missouri in the Republican column, and he's able to do those things that Republican candidates for the last 20 years have not been able to do.
That's true, but also under Donald Trump, the House of Representatives was lost, the Senate was lost, and the White House was lost. And remember, he lost a popular vote by 2.85 million in 2016 and by 7.1 million in 2020. He never had a majority in any public opinion poll or in anything else that was behind him, and Joe Biden is up in the 60s. So I point that out, that Donald Trump is a person who never won the popular vote, never has won a poll with 50%, and lost the House, Senate, and the White House. So, yes, it's true he won because of the craziness of the Electoral College, and yet now that he lost and it's the same electoral vote, he's still challenging it and claiming he's going to come back in August. It's going to be a reinstatement, and that's absolutely mentally insane. That's not going to happen. And it's time that he be repudiated by anybody who's sensible in the Republican Party, as I see it.
But couldn't we say about President George W. Bush that he lost the House and Senate for his party, and also John McCain was hurt very badly in his election because of the Bush policies? Barack Obama lost the Senate and the Congress for his party, and Hillary Clinton was hurt very badly because of his presidency. I mean, couldn't we say the same of them?
Well, yes, except George W. Bush did have public opinion polls for much of his time in office way above 50%. The only president who's never had that in modern times since the 1940s is Donald Trump. Never had a majority behind him.
But why do you think it is that what he has, though, is a group that does not seem to waver? Everybody I talked to after the last election, even though he lost, he now is, as it stands, the person in presidential history, second place, received more votes than anybody else, second only to Joe Biden, the person who beat him in the last election. And also, his supporters, even though, you know, it is in the 30 percentile, they're devoted.
They're devoted, but you can't win a national election with 30 to 40% behind you.
Don't you believe, though, as most people have said, that had the economy been good, had there been no coronavirus, with as close as it was in a lot of these states, that he probably would have won?
I would agree that he would have done better, but I still don't think he would have won. But I do think the economy definitely killed him off, and also his lack of response to the pandemic and not promoting the proper policy. It was just a bad year for him, but that's the way it is in politics. Timing is everything.
But, you know, one of the things that happens is when somebody's in office, we get a little tired of them no matter who they are. We see them all the time.
Yes.
And that now will happen to Biden. It's already starting to happen to a certain degree. And a lot of people say Trump will run again in 2024. It wouldn't surprise me if he did.
I don't think he'll be running. I honestly don't think so. He's going to be indicted soon, and it's not going to be possible while he's under trial to be running for president. I don't think he will. But I think he's trying to keep that idea alive. But no, I think it will be someone else, and probably a Trumpite, somebody who has followed Trump. But I don't think that's a winning case. I don't think anybody else can beat Donald Trump. Can beat Donald Trump.
Now, what do you think he will be indicted on?
On the financial charges that are coming up in New York. And still, there is a chance he'll be indicted on that case of that woman who claims she was raped and wants his DNA to be tested because she claims she was raped. I think more likely the financial charges.
How do you think that will...
Looks like at this point.
Well, in modern times, we certainly have never had a former president indicted on criminal charges. Well, how do you think that would go over?
Well, of course, the supporters would be very upset. Obviously, but I don't think it's a question of public opinion. It's a question everybody's subject to the same laws, and therefore a president or former president should be in the same situation as you and I.
Do you think there was a higher scrutiny paid to Donald Trump than any other president?
In office? No, I would not agree. No, I think all of them are. And that's the reality. That's actually, like you said, Joe Biden will be scrutinized more as time goes on. But I think every president, this is part of being in the White House. You get the good and the bad. And I think, you know, I don't think he's been scrutinized anymore other than by his own, behavior, you know, obviously.
Well, I was having this conversation with Glenn yesterday, and I think it was during one of the breaks, that I don't think that anybody got the television time or the front page of the national newspapers more than Donald Trump. It was constant on network news channels.
Because he's controversial. He always has something controversial to say. That's why he craves publicity more than anybody ever has in the White House.
Right, but with that goes a higher level of scrutiny, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's higher than Barack Obama had for 8 years. I think it's pretty much the same, but, you know, and same with Bill Clinton, certainly, and same with George W. Bush, constantly facing scrutiny and attack from one side or the other.
When it comes to the Ohio Republican Party, it is interesting that we have an incumbent governor here who more than likely is going to be primaried. That very rarely ever happens on the Republican or Democratic side, that a sitting governor would be primaried. And for the first time in a long time, these internal polls are showing that Mike DeWine probably could win in a general election, but might have more trouble winning in his own primary.
Well, that's true because of the Trump support against those who are critical of Trump. So, but I think that actually what will probably happen is, unfortunately in his case, he will not be the nominee, and the nominee will be seen as so far to the right that the general public, which is not Republican far right, including women and college-educated people and suburbanites and young people and minorities, if they're allowed to vote under the changing of the laws that are going on, I think that, that the Democrats will benefit from that.
When we look at this pandemic, since January, the vaccinations started to become available, first with first responders and then senior citizens, and then it trickled down to educators, and now it's pretty well available to most people of a certain age, mm-hmm. but people are not showing up. And we're in Ohio in the 40th percentile, and I look at other states, nobody is near 70%, which is the number that they had hoped to be at when these things became available. What has happened here?
I guess people are tired of the whole pandemic and just want to live life again, and I can understand that. But I still think it's smart to get vaccinated. I mean, it's the same thing would have been smart in the 1950s for people not to get polio vaccine. I'm pretty sure, I was very young then, but I'm pretty sure everybody said, oh yes, we have to do this. And I think this anti-vaxxer thing is very dangerous because I think it's undermining public health and safety.
Well, the thing of it is what is going to happen from here on out? Do you think at any point that states will make it mandatory?
I don't think Republican states will. Democratic states, I don't know. I would think probably not make it mandatory, but I think it should. I think employers should make it mandatory for their workers and schools, certainly for kids, to have to eventually get vaccinated, just as they have to get the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. There's no choice. They have to. So, but I don't know about the government doing it. Although I must say, the governments of many states now are showing they're ready to tell localities, you have no rights, you can't decide anything, while they condemn the federal government. I find that hypocrisy, how Ron DeSantis is doing that in Florida, where the different municipalities have no control over anything. He's taking, and same thing, I don't know about Ohio, but also the same in Texas and in other states. And it's just hypocrisy when they're against big government, and yet they want the states to dictate to the local governments in their own states.
You know, it's very interesting because for a long time, we thought the nature of politics was what was causing this division between people, Republican and Democrat. And through this pandemic, I think what we have learned, certainly since the vaccine, is that, and the mask wearing, is that it really is not politics. It now has turned into, should I wear a mask? Shouldn't I wear a mask? Should I get the vaccine? Should I not get the vaccine? Friendships are lost on this. Names are called about this. Why can't people just, you know, hey, I got the vaccine. If you don't want to, that's your business. And if for the people who don't get the vaccine, I didn't get the vaccine, but if you wanted to, that's your business. Why is it so contentious?
Well, it's because politics since the 1990s have become that way, since the Bill Clinton-Newt Gingrich era, where Newt Gingrich and the House of Representatives going Republican and the Senate going Republican under Bob Dole declared, quote, war, end quote, on Bill Clinton and the Democratic Party. And it's been going on now for, therefore, what, 27 years it's been that way. So both sides are going at each other's throats. It's sad. It shouldn't be that way. And the Republican Party in the 70s and 80s was a very different party. Yes, a conservative party, but responsible. And they had good people who were governors and senators who now have repudiated the, you know, Trump and all those of his followers and are part of the Lincoln Project and other groups that have declared they're no longer Republicans as long as the Trump wing is controlling the party. And I support them in that.
But I don't know if the numbers are correct. If the numbers in Ohio are 40% of people, just over 40% of people are vaccinated, I would not consider that a political issue. Because I would imagine there are more, because if the idea is that Democrats get vaccinated and Republicans don't, I would believe there are more than low 40 percentile of Democrats in the state of Ohio. So I don't know that this vaccine is a political issue. So why is it so contentious?
Because of different people taking sides. Because if you're a Trump supporter, you're against it. And if you're not a Trump supporter, you know, you're for the vaccination. So it's become a political issue around Donald Trump.
See, I don't know if that's true. I really don't know. Because I had Jim Renacci on last week, who is the former congressman who has Trump's campaign manager advising him at this point to run against Governor DeWine. He took the vaccine. I don't know that this is political. Mike DeWine, like it or not, is a Republican. He took the vaccine.
And so, quite a conservative man, actually.
Right.
Yes.
So I don't know that it is. I don't know that people have said it has to do with Trump. I don't know. I haven't seen the numbers to belie that because Trump did not get 60% of the vote in Ohio, and that's about how many people are not vaccinated.
Well, I think a lot of it is lack of knowledge of science and unwillingness to accept science, and that's true, I think, nationally. We also have the same thing with history. We have people telling us, do not teach about the Tulsa Race Massacre. Do not teach us about the mass murder of Native Americans. Do not talk about what happened to Japanese Americans in the past, or Jews, or Catholics, or other people like that. And that's terrifying to think that in a classroom, you're going to have school boards and politicians telling you, you can't do this. You know, it's critical race theory. They call it. The point is, it's not a question of saying we're racist. It's a question of teaching the truth of the past so we can change the way people see things in the future so this will not be repeated.
Yeah, but why is it weak? The vaccine thing fascinates me because it's, you know, I understand to a certain degree why people get bent out of shape about politics because with political candidates goes beliefs on abortion, on same-sex marriage. So I understand that. With the vaccinations, I don't get it. Because if you're for the vaccine, you get the vaccine, and you're being told you're pretty much safe. Okay, you're safe. If you don't get the vaccine, you've been told you're not safe. So again, that's a choice. And vaccinations are free here in the state of Ohio.
And everywhere, yes.
They are free. They are available with no appointment. So why are the two sides at loggerheads with each other, criticizing each other? If somebody got it, that was their choice. If somebody didn't get it, that's their choice. The repercussions will be what they'll be, but that's not what it is. It's you're an idiot for not getting it. You're an idiot for getting it. Why? Who cares?
Well, because we live in a time of everybody insulting each other. It's terrible. It's not good. I agree.
Yeah, well, but where did that come from? Has society changed? What happened?
Well, again, I really think before even the pandemic came along, the attack mode of Newt Gingrich and Pat Buchanan and Donald Trump and others like that is what's led to this. I really believe that it has led to people insulting each other. And once you insult it, the tendency of those being insulted is to insult back, which is sad. But I think that's what it is.
Do you think society will ever be able to bounce back from this? Or is this just how we are now?
Right now we're in a bad mode, but I would like to think we will eventually be transformed. But I think as long as Donald Trump is in the picture as a potential candidate, I think it's going to continue to be a problem. But I think that will be resolved before 2024, because I don't think he's going to be the nominee, and I don't think he's going to run.
What has social media, what part has social media played in this, this bad discourse?
Social media is really a tragedy. It really is. Facebook and Twitter. One thing that's interesting is Trump is no longer on Twitter, and he tried his own blog, and he gave it up yesterday after 29 days. So it shows the power of social media, particularly Twitter, but also Facebook. And I think Facebook's leader, Mark Zuckerberg, has been a disgrace that he allows a lot of hate and a lot of misunderstanding of things to be promoted just to make money. And I think there is a need to have a regulation of social media on the national level.
Do you think it's easier to... I do. Do you think it's easier to call somebody a name on social media that you would never...
Well, of course, because you're not looking at the person.
Right, but you would never...
Absolutely, yes.
You would never do that in person. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, you'd never get in the conversation with them.
That's true. Social media is great and it's horrible. It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, it's just... It's very bizarre because I do not... 99% of the time post or like anybody's comment. Not that I would make a negative comment, but I do read them. And I see the things people type to each other on social media on topics like this. And I know these people, and I know darn well if they were standing in the room, that would not be happening.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right. That's why social media is a blessing and it's a curse. But that's like many things in life.
Well, what part do you think this is going to play as we go on in history? Because you have a president who's going to be over 80 at the time of the next election.
Yes.
And a lot of people feel he will run for one term. I don't know. Power is very hard to let go of.
I think it really depends on his state of his health. I think that if he's in good shape physically and mentally, and those people who say he's not in good mental shape, that is not true. Just because he stutters, that's a problem he's had. He seems perfectly fine. Of course, he's not perfect. He makes little blunders and errors, but so does every president, so does everyone. But I think, honestly, people don't necessarily agree with me that his wife loves him and is happy that he's president, but if she doesn't think he's fit to run another term, she will convince him that one term is enough. I really do believe that. Maybe I'm naive, but I do believe that.
Where do you think...
By the way, today's her birthday, Dr. Biden's birthday. She's 70 today, just for the record.
Do you think that his vice president, Vice President Harris, would be a shoo-in for the nomination should Biden decide not to run for a second term?
No, I'm sure there'll be plenty of challenges, but I think she would have an edge because she's vice president. But I don't think it would be a shoo-in, no. And I must say, the one thing that worries me is that there's hints already about threats against both Biden and Harris, and I've gathered that there are more threats against Harris than against Biden, because, believe me, I know some people, and I know of people I read about, who are so upset that a mixed-race woman is a heartbeat away, just as they were unhappy with a mixed-race man being president. And I think it's really terrifying that I'm sure with all of the hate mongers out there and these different groups that participated in January 6th insurrection, that I think there are plots to try to kill one or both, but I think maybe more against the vice president. So it's not an easy life either of them faces with constant death threats. The Secret Service doesn't tell us at this point, but I'm sure we will look back and say this is so, because Obama had more death threats than anybody since Lincoln. And we know that. So I'm pretty sure Harris is facing the same thing, because we live in a country where we cannot accept that people who are not white might move ahead into power.
Well, you know, do you think it is that, or do you think it is a party stereotype? Because it does seem like... I always wonder, and I would like to see if an African American or a woman got the nomination of the Republican Party, would they be able to win? Is this a party thing, or is it a color, race, gender thing?
I think it's probably both, because the Republican Party, remember, started in opposition to the expansion of slavery and promotion, indeed, to to end slavery. But now they have, in the modern era and the Trump era, they have become the Southern Democrats of the Civil War era. I've written about this 160 years ago. Really, what the Democratic Party represented is similar to what the Republican Party, not counting the Lincoln Project group, but the ones that are in control right now in the House and Senate. They really are like the Democrats of the 1860s. Now race is something to be used against people rather than promoting racial equality. And they're doing that by trying to stop people from voting and having all kinds of barriers in many of these states, Texas, Florida, and others. And it's definitely because they know that a majority of African Americans and Latinos will vote Democratic. So they're trying to fix the results of future elections, like in Texas, allowing a judge to decide, oh, throw out the whole election, which is outrageous. And that's why this has to be stopped by national legislation.
Well, it's interesting to me because I have heard, there are definitely women, and I'm sure you've heard their names as well, that are being bandied around in the Republican Party as a nominee for the next presidential election. Now, if Biden decides to run again, okay, let's say he runs again, or there is a male, white male candidate in the Democratic Party, but you get a woman in the Republican Party, does she have a chance to win?
Well, the ones that I think we would think of would be Nikki Haley and also Shelley Moore Capito, the senator from West Virginia, but I don't think she shows any interest. Nikki Haley does, but she has made a fool of herself by her behavior and her skipping back and forth, showing total lack of principle. I once thought she was quite competent and quite outstanding. She has a good background, but she has really become a supplicant to Donald Trump, and I don't think that's a positive thing.
You know, it also comes down to this in a way. I have heard conversations from very, who I consider to be astute people, about political candidates' looks. Now,
that shouldn't be an issue at all.
No, but it is.
Yes.
And I don't really quite understand that, because I look at some of the presidents who we've had on both sides of the aisle, and I don't think they got elected because they were going to be pin-up posters in somebody's room.
Well, like Abraham Lincoln, that space was homely.
Well, but even in our modern television times, Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon,
yes.
These are not the most beautiful people on the face of the earth.
No, and William Howard Taft was 350 pounds back in the beginning of the 20th century. No, you're right, but I think an awful lot is based on appearance, unfortunately, in the age of modern media, but it should not be a factor, no. But we have people always making fun of people's looks all the time I see on Facebook. And the thing is, you know, I often have reacted to things, and I'm coming to the point, my oldest son tells me, Dad, stop commenting on things, just read and shake your head. He said, because it's going to cause you high blood pressure. And I think he's right, so I'm trying to stop commenting as much as I have, because it doesn't get you anywhere. You don't change anybody's mind.
Well, why do you think it is, and it certainly is, that a woman's looks in a political arena seem to matter more than a man's?
Well, I think it's misogyny. And certainly Donald Trump has promoted misogyny.
But you know, I know people who have voted for women and who like these women, but if they the makeup is not applied right or the dress is not right, they will comment.
Yes. Well, it's disgraceful. What can I say? I would never do that, but I know a lot of people do it. But you just have to learn as much as possible to not let social media get you so involved as you get your blood pressure up. It's not worth it.
Well, you know, and Glenn and I have had some conversations recently about it's the terms that we use about politics and politicians in general in this country. You know, I can't think of a politician, when I think of the people who we've known in history, we talk about history, that I would use a horrible adjective about. When there have been people like Adolf Hitler and Joseph Stalin and Benito Mussolini and people like that in our history, I think it's hard to call any American politician in history by those terms, in those terms.
Well, I would not completely agree, because I think, I know, I'm going to mention who it is at the end, a person who actually accomplished a lot, but but actually was undermining the Constitution and indeed threatening our country. Richard Nixon, I think, does need to be condemned, and I think Donald Trump inciting, and I believe he did, no matter what anybody says, inciting the January 6th riot and refusing to accept the results after all this time and stirring up right-wing extremism, I think they should both be condemned. But other than them, no, nobody else on the same level as Nixon and Trump. But you know, we can disagree on that, but that's the way I see it. If you're threatening the Constitution and rule of law, as both of them have done, I think they should be condemned. I'm not saying they're Hitler, no, thank God, but it's just, I do think that they should be condemned.
Well, I think the problem lies in the fact of, it's interesting to me, and that the early people, early presidents in this country, most of them owned slaves, and Thomas Jefferson obviously fathered children with slaves.
Yes, 10 of the first 12 presidents had slaves, yes.
But I would never hear anybody say that Thomas Jefferson was horrible or disgraceful. But certainly what he did, a lot of people would feel that way. Now, we also go to Herbert Hoover. Herbert Hoover, I've been reading a lot about him recently. He was so beloved during World War One for what he did overseas.
Yes, he was fantastic, yes.
So beloved, lived a long life, lived longer than President Kennedy. Of course, Kennedy struck down, but Herbert Hoover was 90 years old when he died. And he came, and he was a smart man. He just did not believe that the government should be giving people handouts. He just did not like the idea, which caused his downfall and caused a lot of people to lose jobs, become unemployed, and lose their life. But I don't know that anybody would call Hoover horrible.
Not horrible, but he is considered a failure by scholars. He's in the bottom 10 of presidents in ratings. But no, I would agree that he has a lot of good things, but I would argue, what is good about Donald Trump's time before he was president? He got us involved in all kinds of things that failed, bankruptcies, and he had Trump steak, and he had Trump Airlines, and Trump University with felony degrees. I mean, he's always been involved in criminal activities, mostly financial, I agree, but also, cheating on his wife, which is not a big deal, but doing it while she was having their son, Barron, and, you know, and these lawsuits have been brought up about it. I don't think, I mean, Herbert Hoover, you have no such record on anything, just that the Great Depression occurred, and his reaction was not adequate.
Well,
so
I think
difference.
I think what will keep President Trump afloat in history is that no wars were started under his presidency.
That's true.
That for the first 3 years before the pandemic, the economy was good. Whoever wants to take credit for that,
the only thing I'll say about that is he came in with a good economy from Obama. Obama came in with a miserable economy from Bush. So he continued what Obama had already accomplished. That's true.
And even the most liberal commentators and politicians who I have spoken to have given him credit for the production of the vaccination.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true.
So, you know, there are good points there.
Well, there's always good points because you're not Hitler. That's true. It's not Hitler or Mussolini or Stalin. But yet, the early estimates, which only were after 1 year on Trump and all the presidents in 2018, he was rated at the absolute bottom. And I don't think after the last 3 years, since the last rating, we'll see what happens, he's going to rise. And if he does rise, he might be above Andrew Johnson and James Buchanan, but he's not going to be any further than maybe two above the bottom at the most.
Do you think, though, that this is personality driven? Because I think, honestly, if you would go to a lot of governors, because we've only had 45 presidents, 46.
Well, 45 people, though, yeah. Right. Grover Cleveland twice, yeah.
So if you go to governors, who we've had a whole lot more of, senators, I mean, we have some really questionable people who have done some really questionable things and said some really questionable things, but we don't remember them like this. He was.
But they're not presidents. Presidents always get more attention.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm not sure. He certainly doesn't go down as the worst politician who ever lived.
No, I don't think he's the worst politician, but I think even though you mentioned a few things that are true, I still think in the balance of history, political scientists and historians, after 1 year, had said he was the absolute bottom. And I don't think after what happened the last 3 years, not just about the pandemic, but also the two impeachments and all that, I just don't see him rising above maybe more than Johnson and Buchanan. Even Warren G. Harding is higher, yeah. And he's not rated well at all.
Well, where do you think history has kind of taken a skew that this is the new politics, that it is a little more entertaining than it was before?
Well, maybe also in the scholarly profession, we're getting people more and more that, you know, there's a split, but yet it's still leaning against Trump, I think. Because even among Republicans, those identified as Republican or conservative political scientists in the 2018 poll, he came out, I think it was third from the bottom, something like that. So like I said, just above Johnson and Buchanan. Of course, if you were a liberal or a Democrat or a moderate or independent, you were at the absolute bottom for Trump. But so only a couple of spots higher. And of course, we'll have to see. I think late this year, hopefully, we will have a C-SPAN poll because it's been a full year since he left office about historians. And we'll also have the American Political Science Association poll that last took place in 2018. Hopefully, they'll do a new one, a political scientist. And then we'll be able to judge maybe by next President's Day.
When we look at this whole pandemic that we went through, what did we learn as a society?
We learned that a lot of people don't want to listen to government advice or mandates on science. That's clearly what it is. People don't like authority. People don't want to be told what to think or do by anybody higher level, including states.
And how many careers, how many people do you think have been ruined by the way they have treated it? Because it pretty well became a state issue.
Ruined? I don't know about ruined, but I think
ended.
A lot depends on where you live and how the government has reacted and how people have reacted to it. And I think Florida and Texas, I think, have really made things much worse overall. And I've had very high accounts of people passing away or being very sick. But, you know, it depends on where you are. You know, I don't know. I can't really easily answer that.
Glenn and I also had this conversation yesterday, and I told him this anecdote with about 8 minutes left here. I said, I know a very well-known national politician who was very successful who has told me that their example was gun control. And they said they were always for gun control, would have always voted for gun control, but when they were campaigning, unless they were asked directly, they would never have said that because they would not have been elected.
Yes, that's the whole problem. If you stand on principle, you often cannot get elected. That's so right. But it's interesting. In all public opinion polls, again, maybe they're not accurate, but people clearly want some kind of gun regulation, and yet the government's not willing to do anything about it.
Well, you know, I look at things like that, and I look at same-sex marriage. You know, prior to running for office, President Obama said he was not for that. And
right.
Then he came to it at some point. Now, my guess would be that in that short amount of time, now he said it was a personal thing that he came to, but I'm guessing more because also political opinion changed during that time, and it
yeah.
got over. So wouldn't you consider that to be more of a political move than a maybe moral move by the president, President Obama?
Yes, that's normal human behavior, though, because you're in office, you want to get in, and you want to stay in, and especially if you're facing another election, yes. So I don't criticize for that, but I do think that's true of all politicians. That's why to get a true profile in courage, like John F. Kennedy wrote about in 1956 about various senators, it's not very easy to find profiles in courage, but I will give credit to the 7 Republican senators who voted to convict Trump on the 2nd impeachment charges, and the 6, including 5 of the 7 on the conviction, who voted for the January 6th commission, and also for the 10 in the House who voted for conviction, and the 35 in the House Republicans who voted for the January 6th commission. I really give them credit because I think they are true profiles of courage, and I think someday somebody will write a book about these people.
So is it okay to get into the office to pretty much flat out lie?
time ago in life. Maybe reassess how that.
Well, you know, it's an interesting question because a lot of people feel that that's just completely dishonest and you can't do it. But then a lot of people feel that if you're going to get in there and then vote for it, that it's okay to, you know, hem-haw with the truth before you get in.
Well, the only thing is that you may get in by not telling the truth. Then when you follow through, you might get defeated, so you'll be out after one term. But that's the way politics is. It has become. But again, I give credit to those who go against the tide. And again, the 35 and 7 on the commission and the 10 and the 6, whatever, 10 or 7 or 6, I'm losing the numbers, 10 and 7 on the conviction and 35 and 6 on the January 6th, commission. I think it's very important that we give credit to those people and honor them. Like Liz Cheney, for instance, Mitt Romney, John Katko, and others. I really think they, and also Kinzinger of Illinois and people like that, they really deserve a lot of credit.
Well, Liz Cheney's an interesting story because when that whole incident was going down, where she was removed, when she made those public statements about President Trump, and she did make them publicly,
yes.
did she not think that that was going to happen? Because I was confused because I thought the moment she made them, she was done. But it seemed to people like it was shocking that she would be removed for that.
Well, I think it was very bad judgment on the part of the Republican Party to silence the dissent. But I think she saw, knew she was in trouble. But even though I'm not a big fan of her father and not really a big fan of her, I got to give her credit again on a lot of issues I don't agree with her. But I think she really spoke from a conscience, and I have to commend her for that.
Do you think this might have been a flaw in the Democratic Party? We mentioned Dick Cheney there, her father. And you go back to these times, Democrats really chastised President W. Bush. They certainly chastised Vice President Dick Cheney. They chastised Father Bush. And then came Donald Trump. So they had said these people were awful for so long that it was just, oh, okay, another awful person that the Democrats don't like. But now the Democrats look at it and think, boy, you know, it'd be great if W. Bush was back in there.
Yes, I've even commented that he looks so much better looking back on it now. But I think once you're away from the political wars and you're part of history and you have time to assess what happened years ago, whatever period of time it is, you do look at people differently. So the historical assessment is always changing. And that, I guess, could favor Donald Trump, that maybe in the long run, not soon, but in the long run, he could look not as bad as I think he is.
Well, it's interesting how they always said that when Hillary Clinton was not running for office, she had a huge approval rating.
Yes.
But the moment she announced, it dropped.
Yes. Well, I think a lot of people admire her record, but don't like her personally. Again, it's a personality issue, I think.
And why do we vote that way? You know, on all the things I've been reading about President Hoover lately, I mean, yes, the Great Depression was going on, but they said Franklin Roosevelt was just more gregarious. He was...
He absolutely was. He was a great speaker and really outgoing. And Hoover, I've heard Hoover, he makes you feel depressed listening to him. He's not a dynamic speaker. He comes across as having no personality. You're right.
So why is that the bottom line for people? I mean, George W. Bush had that over Al Gore. They said he was the guy you'd want to have a drink with. Al Gore
yes.
was too straight-laced.
Well, if someone comes across as too intellectual or too distant in their personality, it turns people off, unfortunately. But that's the way it is.
So do the Democrats, when there is not a pandemic going on in the next presidential election, have to be mindful of that? Because a lot of people in the last election, a lot of very learned people said Joe Biden didn't really win the election. Donald Trump lost it. So if you don't have a Trump in 2024 and you have a moderate or just a typical Republican again, and you have a Democrat who people do feel is too old or do feel is just vanilla paper, are they in trouble?
They could be, and actually I would probably advocate Joe Biden retire at age 82. I really think he should. But then he would have to announce that in the third year, like July or August, to give time for the primaries, because it won't just be Harris. There would be challenges.
Dr. Feinman, it's been a lot of fun. And again, you can catch Dr. Feinman every Wednesday, 12:15 to 1 p.m. with Glenn Coble. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Dr. Ron Feinman, I'll be back in 15 minutes.
LP Marion, Ohio. The Talking Place. For Jim Lavelle, the man handcuffed to Lee Harvey Oswald when he was assassinated.
So when you're coming out the door,